morning, everybody. It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker, Brad Anderson, Democratic candidate for Iowa Secretary of State. During the 2012 election, Mr. Anderson served as President Obama's Iowa campaign director. Throughout that campaign, Brad and his team increased voter turnout and organized volunteers and officials across the state to protect Iowans' right to vote. As a result, Iowa was one of just a few states to increase voter turnout from the historic level set in 2008. Since 1997, Mr. Anderson has helped build campaigns dedicated to middle-class job creation, tax fairness, and civil rights. Previously, he helped coordinate and message and media efforts for Tom Harkin's 2002 Senate campaign, and also worked on John Edwards' 2004 presidential campaign. Several years ago, Mr. Anderson joined Link Strategies, where he continues to advise campaigns and assist local communities on referenda to create jobs, improve wellness, and make communities safer. From 2007 through 2008, Mr. Anderson served as communications director for Iowa Governor Chet Culver. In that time, Culver signed into law several landmark pieces of legislation, including laws to increase the minimum wage, expand preschools, and establish same-day voting voter registration. In 2010, Mr. Anderson and his business partner, Jeff Link, started a company called My Digital Manager, a simple, user-friendly online platform for searching video and digital assets. Brad and his wife, Lisa, along with their children, Alice and Will, live in Des Moines. Please help me welcome candidate for Iowa Secretary of State, Brad Anderson.
Thank you all for the opportunity to be here. I really do appreciate it. And thank you, Mike, for that great introduction. And thank you, Jonathan, for allowing me to invite myself to your breakfast. I appreciate that. I went to meet with him. And I know you had a lot of great speakers. I did not realize this was being recorded for posterity, so I will try and make this one count. But I know you've had a lot of great speakers in the past, and this is a terrific, terrific group, and I do very much appreciate the opportunity to be here. When I work with candidates, I always advise them against acknowledgments. So in the spirit of not taking my own advice, I do want to acknowledge one guy that is here, who's my business partner, Chris Diebel. And Chris and I work closely together. He is running for city council at large. I'm a big fan of Chris, and I do wish Chris the best of luck in that race. I think he'd make a great city council member. Now, a couple other people I want to thank is the volunteers that worked on the 2012 Obama campaign. We built the largest organization in state history, and it was because of a lot of people in this room. Now, I know we've got a lot of lawyers in the House today that helped with voter protection, and I really want to thank you as well. You guys did a terrific job, and I think the results showed that. Now, in October, after the town hall debate with Mitt Romney, the first stop Barack Obama made was to Iowa. And as you know, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama had a tough time staying away from Iowa during the general election. And the president came to Mount Vernon. And like all of his events, I went and attended as state director. And an advanced person came up to me and said, "The president wants to see you after his speech." And I thought, okay, that's not uncommon. I think he liked to kind of, ask me questions about the organization. I think he liked to see me sweat a little bit because he was the president. And so I immediately called my staff and got up to date on all the numbers and went backstage. And sure enough, there was a lunch set up in Mount Vernon in this gymnasium. And I realized I'm having lunch with the President of the United States. This is amazing. And so we sat there and we had lunch. And it was me, the President, Jay Carney, who's his press secretary, and David Plouffe, who was a senior advisor at the time. And we're sitting there having lunch, and he was asking me, of course, about the organization. and he was asking me specifically about the Latino program, and I was talking to him about that. Of course, I didn't eat barely anything, and then they started talking about foreign policy and other things I felt like he didn't want me to weigh in on. So then I did kind of pick at my food, and then by the end of the lunch, he looked at me, and he says, "Well, looks like this could come down to you and Ohio." I said, "Okay, that's a pretty big burden right there." I said, "Look, Mr. President, I know the future of the middle class is at stake, and we will deliver Iowa for you." And then he looked at me and he said, "The future of the middle class?" He said, "The future of the free world as we know it is at stake. So get it done." And then he gave me one of the man hugs, you know, like a little tap on the back, and then went into his limo and off they went. And it was a 4-minute interaction, and for a couple seconds, the burden of that is something like you can't even describe when you realize the burden. But then I started thinking about it. And it was October at the point, and I actually felt incredibly good about Iowa. Because, again, we had built the largest organization in the history of the state. You know, and in Iowa, we have 40 days of early voting. And unlike any other state, you can check and monitor the votes coming in. So you can monitor Republicans, Democrats, and no party. And we knew the Republicans and no party that were supporting the president because we kept great data. And that was famously documented in a lot of books. So one of the great things about the campaign is we got to monitor this, and we won every single day of early vote for the president. And that was an enormous accomplishment for us. The other thing is we started with a voter registration deficit. And it was about 26,000 votes, I believe, in June of 2012. And as you know, as many people know, Iowa, a lot of people are registered here. And it is hard, very hard, to find people that aren't registered to vote. You got to look under every leaf, every rock, every campus, and find those people. And but we did it. And by December, we had a 4,500 voter registration surplus over the Republicans. And again, we felt very good about that. But as Mike was saying, the thing I'm most proud of is the fact that no one in the media, no one on the other side for sure, and many people in our own party, no one thought we could increase turnout compared to 2008. They said, "Nope, that is a watershed year. History was being made. Everybody hated Bush. You know, the economy was collapsing. There's no way you will even meet turnout from 2008. And yet, because of the hard work of the people in this room and our incredible volunteers, we increased turnout by 43,000 votes. And that's something I'm incredibly proud of. Thank you. Now, we did all this in the wake of enormous adversity from the Secretary of State's office. And I never wanted to run for anything, ever. And I've never mentioned it to my wife, the idea of running, because I never really thought about it. Never talked to Chris, never talked to Jeff, never talked to anyone about running. But then the campaign happened, and I saw what was happening in the Secretary of State's office. And he was doing things like talking about voter ID. Knowing he's out there pushing voter ID, knowing it could disenfranchise up to 10% of eligible voters. In 2011, the Des Moines Register actually did a study, and they went out and asked all the county auditors in the entire state, "Do you support Matt Schultz's photo ID bill?" Not one, not a single county auditor, Republican or Democrat, supported his bill. In fact, the Republican president of the County Auditor Association said she did not support it because, quote, "some specific populations would struggle with this more than others. It was too unnecessary, too costly, and there's no reason for it." yet Matt Schultz continues to push it to this day. In addition to that, we saw during the campaign he was spending $280,000 in federal funds on a DCI investigation to hunt down voter fraud. And he's currently getting audited by the Republican auditor of the state of Iowa for perhaps misusing those funds. And we'll find out the results of that audit later on this year. Now, keep in mind, Matt Schultz has spent years investigating voter fraud. Hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of people have voted since he has taken office. Yet there's not a single conviction, not one, of anyone committing voter fraud in the state of Iowa. And that is remarkable. So I sat there and I saw this, and I thought, it's offensive. I don't support it, but it really wasn't, you know, I still wasn't thinking about running myself as a candidate, because I never thought of myself as a candidate. But then we saw the voter purge rule. And the voter purge rule was the straw for me that broke the camel's back, and this bears some explanation. So I'm glad I had 20 minutes to do that. I won't spend 20 minutes on this, though. But the voter purge rule is important. So what Matt Schultz wants to do is create a list. Okay? On this list is going to be people who signed up for a driver's license, but they were undocumented workers, and then registered to vote. Your name shows up on a list. Then he wants to take that list and compare it to a federal database. And then after he creates the final list, he's going to send threatening letters to the people on this list saying, you could be committing a felony by voting. Show me your papers. Show me your papers. Now, here's what's wrong with that. It's number one, you could have become a naturalized citizen, and most people have become naturalized citizens in between signing up for that driver's license and registering to vote. Yet you're still going to get a threatening letter saying, show me your papers. Now imagine, here in Des Moines, we have a lot of refugees from Sudan, from Bosnia, from regimes where getting a letter like that really matters. And what is it going to do? Of course, it's going to have a chilling effect on people from regimes such as that. Now, or also, imagine this. Imagine a woman from Cedar Rapids who lost her paperwork in the flood, who's a perfectly eligible citizen of Iowa. To vote, she's going to have to spend $345 to get new papers and an in-person trip to Des Moines and then wait 6 months, even though she's a perfectly eligible voter. Now, my view on this is simple. Guilty until proven innocent is un-American, it is un-Iowan, and it is ending the day I take office as Secretary of State. I can tell you that right now. So, back in April, Matt Schultz was speaking to a conservative audience. He's actually taking the place of Rick Santorum, who's supposed to speak, who I know everyone in this room is a big fan of. And in that speech, he said the following. There are a whole lot of issues that we care about. Abortion, gay marriage, a whole lot of social issues that we care deeply about. But you have to start caring about voter ID and election integrity as well. Because if you don't have that, you'll never be able to make a difference in any other issue you care about. Never. Because they will cheat. They'll cheat. Who will cheat? Who will cheat? Iowans? Keep in mind, hundreds of thousands of dollars has been spent, years of investigations, millions of votes, not a single conviction of voter fraud. Who will cheat? The fact is, he has been unable to prove Iowans are cheaters for a simple reason. Iowans are not cheaters. Iowans simply are not cheaters. Now, I've been thinking a lot about this because last week I got back from 6 weeks working on a campaign in Iraqi Kurdistan. And I was given the opportunity to work on a campaign in an emerging democracy in the Middle East, and that was just something I was not going to pass up. Now, by way of background, Iraqi Kurdistan is in the northern region of Iraq. And the Kurds are the largest ethnic population in the entire world without a state. So Kurds make up Syria, Iran, Turkey, and Iraq. Now, Iraqi Kurdistan is the closest thing they have to a state because it's a semi-autonomous region in Iraq. They fly their own flag, they have their own security, and they have their own parliament. It's fascinating. And it's fascinating the fact that on September 21st, they had their fourth parliamentary election since 1992. So they're an emerging democracy. Now, like any emerging democracy, they face enormous challenges with voter fraud. There are documented cases of thousands... Is that my buzzer? There are documented cases of thousands of dead people voting. Documented cases. There are news stories constantly of total ballot boxes going missing. So to vote in Iraqi Kurdistan, you have to, what's great is they all get dressed up. The women wear these beautiful Kurdish outfits. The men get, you know, what men do, they dress up to the extent they can. And they walk to the polls. And at the polls, they get frisked by an armed guard with a machine gun. And then they walk in. And then they show their photo ID. Then they get their ballot stamped with an official stamp. Then they put that ballot in an official secure box. Then they famously dip their finger in permanent purple ink. These are steps that are taken in Iraq, and it may surprise you to know, I think this makes a ton of sense. This makes a ton of sense because they have faced enormous challenges regarding fraud. Now, the big lesson for me going over there is every election official in every democracy is faced with a balance. And they have to balance fighting fraud with access to the polls. And this is a balance faced with every election official in the country. Now, the election official in Iraq obviously faced enormous fraud. So they did something about it and they took severe steps. Now, at the same time, they also tried to balance access. So what did they do? They declared Election Day a holiday. So you didn't have to work. You could vote. Make sure people voted. They had TV ads running in Iraq telling people, sponsored by the government, telling people what to expect at the polls. And in some cases, they even kept the polls open longer if the lines were long, but just to make sure they had that access. Now, Iowa is not Iraq. We face a different set of challenges here in Iowa. 681,000 eligible voters in Iowa did not vote in the 2012 presidential election. 681,000 eligible people didn't vote. We need a different approach in Iowa than they have in Iraq. Yet for the first time in our state's history, we have an election official that refuses to balance out those two things, blatantly and willfully ignoring this important balance that election officials should face and most do face in every democracy. For the first time in our state's history, we have an election official who is abusing the Secretary of State's office for partisan gain. Now think about the history of our voter laws. We have actually pretty good laws on the books. You know, we have satellite voting, for example. Satellite voting makes it easier for people to vote. This was a law enacted in the early 90s, and it was signed into law by Terry Branstad, while Elaine Baxter, a Democrat, was Secretary of State. Iowa was one of the first states in the country to enact no-fault voting, no-fault early voting, meaning you don't need to have a reason to vote absentee. Iowa was one of the first states. That law was signed into law by Terry Branstad. In addition, we have what's called the Precinct Atlas, which is an electronic poll book that has won national awards because it detects fraud at the onset. So basically what you do is, a lot of counties have this now, whereas you check in with an ID if you want. Most people do. You check in with an ID, and then it tells you if you're a felon, where you can vote, and it makes sure that fraud is not prevented at the onset. That was invented by a Republican from Cerro Gordo, Ken Klein. Partisanship has never made its way into our election law until now. The biggest threat to the integrity of our elections is Matt Schultz, because of the fact that you cannot have honest elections in the state of Iowa if you are actively disenfranchising eligible voters in Iowa. And that is just a fact. Now, what can we do? What can we do? The first, I believe, is do no harm. So this weekend, I was fixing my drain in my sink. I have two kids, a wife with beautiful long red hair, and one bathroom. And I'm obsessed with drains for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't know why. I'm obsessed with them. And so I started tinkering around, and I broke, of course, the cap that goes in the sink where the water goes down. I just broke it. For no reason, it wasn't even clogged, but I broke it. And then I went to the hardware store, but they don't just sell the caps, because this is an old drain, so I had to buy a whole new drain. Talk about unintended consequences. For hours, I had to basically install a new drain on a perfectly good old drain. And that's the rule of do no harm. We've got great election laws on the books right now, and there's no reason, none, to change these laws. Yet, again, we've got an election official that is trying to do so. Now, there are a couple things we can do to improve them, I believe. Number one is online voter registration, for example. You know, Minnesota, just this past week, signed into law online voter registration. I talked to a guy, Fred Hubble. I don't know how many of you guys know Fred. Fred is a great guy. He's on my steering committee. He said, look, billion-dollar business transactions happen every day online. Why can't we register to vote online? 15 other states have online voter registration. It's easier, it's cheaper, it's less paperwork, and it's safer. It's safer. So let's look into ways we can do that here in Iowa. Another thing we can do is expand the use of electronic poll books. I talked about Ken Klein's Precinct Atlas. It's a great tool. I think the Secretary of State should promote expansion of electronic poll books. And I think we should, you know, push that in counties across the entire state. You know, there are other things the Secretary of State's office does that doesn't get reported. For example, you know, the business services, it's kind of a less reported but equally important service that the Secretary of State provides. And also 28E agreements. Now this is one I love. The Secretary of State's office is the warehouse, essentially, for all 28E agreements in the state of Iowa. These are agreements between cities and counties to share services. And these are used a lot in small towns. Yet you never hear about 28E agreements. I mean, what about if we had a Secretary of State that spent a little less time on this fruitless mission to find voter fraud and more time talking about 28E agreements and maybe coming up with some best practices and finding a way to save taxpayers millions of dollars? There are a lot of great things we can do with this important office, but we need someone with a goal. My goal is to make us number one in voter turnout within the decade and modernize the office. Now, I get a lot of advice as a candidate. A lot more, I'm sure Chris does too, a lot more than I ever thought I would get. Now, for example, Bonnie Campbell, who's my campaign chair, told me to shave my beard. I had this very ugly, patchy, multicolored beard when I announced my candidacy. Does anyone know Bonnie? Do folks know Bonnie? If you've ever met Bonnie, she's the nicest human being I think I've ever met in my entire life. And what she said in classic Bonnie Campbell fashion is, you know, that beard looks fine, but I think you'd be better served without it. And for anyone that knows Bonnie, that is such a great quote, because she's saying you're fine, but ultimately she's saying get rid of the beard. It's terrible, in her own Bonnie way. Some of the other advice I've gotten is not to run, not to campaign on this idea of fraud. Don't go out there and talk about it. Talk about mechanics liens, kind of coast on the fact that you've got a common last name, and try and get elected that way. I clearly rejected that advice. And the people in this room know the importance of the civil rights fight. And the people in this room know that the people of Iowa are a fair-minded, understanding bunch of people. And civil rights fights are important. And we have an enormous challenge on our hands with regard to voting rights, not only in Iowa, but in the entire country. Now is the time to wage this fight and address it head on. And no one in the state knows it more than the people sitting in this room today. So, again, I am incredibly, incredibly honored to have the time to talk with you. I apologize if I went a little long. But please, I cannot do this campaign alone. I do need your help. If you've got time, resources, whatever you can offer, my website is andersonforiowa.com. But I need your help. And with your help, we will make sure that everyone in this state is granted the right to vote who is eligible to vote, regardless of their last name, regardless of where they're from, and regardless of which party they support. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Now, can I have that water, Stephen? Thank you, sir. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Like I said, I try to address everything, but believe it or not, there's a lot in this race, and this is a high-profile race, as it should be. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those at this time. Yes?
The Koch brothers are known to have a lot of money, and they're throwing out a lot of voter suppression, especially in North Carolina and other places. Are you fully informed on those issues, and do you think that will happen here in Iowa?
That's a great question. So there are going to be third parties, and there are third parties that are very, very passionate about suppressing votes. It's a weird thing to get behind, but they do it for partisan reasons. And I anticipate, because of the fact that Iowa is a battleground, it's a very purple state, and we're proud of that. We're proud of the fact that we have, tend to be an independent electorate. I fully anticipate them to target Iowa in the Secretary of State's race and try and push these voter suppression bills and able to help extreme Republicans win elections. So that's one of the reasons, actually, I announced my candidacy in January, which I don't know if you guys know Kay Henderson. Kay Henderson is a reporter for Radio Iowa, and she put out a timeline. She says something to the effect of, in my press conference where I announced my candidacy, Barack Obama started his presidential campaign 9 months, 10 months before the caucuses. You're starting yours 24 months before, I guess 20 months at that time, before the election. Why? And the reason is because it's a down ballot race. I think it's one of the most important in the country. And I need to spend the time to raise the resources to win the election. And part of my goal is to continue the incredible organization that we built for the Obama campaign. And it is still alive, it is still running, and they are very, very passionate about voting rights. And so, for instance, I was just in Ottumwa talking to a group there. I've been all around the state, and we get great turnout on this very issue, and people are still passionate about it. So I do anticipate third-party groups are going to come in. The reason I announced so early is to make sure that we have the resources and the organization in place to win next November.
Very good.
Yes. Thank you very much.